I'm sorry, so sorry.
Dear Leafs fans, on behalf of the ownership of Maple Leaf Sports and Entertainment, we want to thank you for your unwavering passion and loyalty. Like every fan of the Toronto Maple Leafs, we are disappointed with the results of this season. The Toronto Maple Leafs are a public trust with the greatest fans in the world. We have fallen short of everyone's expectations, and for that, we are sorry. We take full responsibility for how this team performs on the ice, and we make no excuses. The way this year ended was unacceptable. Results are the only measure of success in sports, and the results speak for themselves. Ownership believes in the plan for the Maple Leafs. All the resources at our disposal will be used to make sure that the entire organization is focused on making the Leafs a successful playoff team. We are 100% committed to ensuring we ice a team that competes with the NHL's best. Passion, hard work, and accountability will always be the hallmarks of our organization. Yes, the Toronto Maple Leafs are privileged to have such... Greg, please. I'm apologizing. The Toronto Maple Leafs are privileged to have such passionate and loyal fans. Respect the apology, Greg. We do not take that for granted. Our entire organization wants nothing more than deliver a team that makes you proud. Yours sincerely, Lawrence M. Tannenbaum, Chairman of the Board, Maple Leaf Sports and Entertainment. It's the era of I'm sorry.
Mr. Burke, do you agree with the letter that was published this morning on the Maple Leafs website?
Larry Tannenbaum wrote a letter, and it says what it says.
Well, no, but Mr. Burke, do you apologize to the fans, sir? Do you apologize to the fans?
He wrote a letter, and it said what it said. And the Pittsburgh model, my ass!
Okay, we're going to get to all of that. Oh, first of all, did you notice the philosophical disconnect of what Larry Tannenbaum wrote and what Brian Burke's MO for putting this team together is? Where am I finding it here? All of the resources at our disposal will be used to make sure the entire organization is focused on making the Leafs a successful playoff team. Now, one of those things is not having a trade freeze before the Christmas trade freeze. One of those other things is long-term contracts that tail off towards the end, which Burke reasserted today. He believes, although it's not proven, is a circumvention of the salary cap, and then musing openly about having a two-week deadline before the NHL trade deadline. Is that using all the resources that are at the Maple Leafs' disposal, Greg Wyshynski?
No, and neither is, you know, sitting there and saying that goaltending was a primary problem and saying the team has to go out and get a goaltender and then saying that, but James Reimer is the real deal, you see. We only need a couple things on this team. A goaltender, a number one center, and everybody to get large. But Reimer, you see, is a victim of the concussion / neck injury. He's the real deal. That's part of the plan, you see.
In Brian's defense there, he said he still thinks that James Reimer is the real deal.
But that's semantics. It's saying he's the real deal. It's putting your faith in him. Now, let me go just on Reimer real quick here.
All right, go ahead.
Last year, I have no problem with them putting their faith in this kid. Okay, I have no problem with that. He earned it. He earned the right to try to be the franchise goaltender. And maybe you want to give him the excuse because of the bum neck, only about, six or seven games into the season, whatever. But now we're in Steve Mason territory. Now we're in a thing where we've seen this guy for a certain sample size, and if you decide that he's the real deal, and you decide you don't have to go all in and get yourself another goaltender to be the starter, well, now it's on you. It's not on Reimer anymore. It's on you.
Mm-hmm. A couple of things about James Reimer. Did he have a, you know, decent end of the year last season? For sure. But I still don't think we know what we have in James Reimer. I don't think the Maple Leafs know what they have in James Reimer. I don't know if Francois Allaire thinks he knows what he has in James Reimer. I don't even think James Reimer knows how good James Reimer can be. We just don't know. This year was plagued with injuries. Last year, I would still submit was plagued with luck more than anything else. And I don't make up my mind about a goaltender until the shooters all have one or two goes around. And they started to really pick him apart. How many times did you see, and this used to be Jose Theodore's problem, going away, high glove. Like every time on Reimer, right? Like that's where everybody was going. It's like you got to do the old Eddie Shore and, you know, tie a rope around the crossbar, tie it to, well, in Eddie Shore's case, it was his, the goaltender's neck, but tie it to James Reimer's hand to try to keep it up.
Now.
But it seems pretty obvious I mean, so much, you mentioned the semantic issue, and so much of this is semantics, of course. You know, we hope to make the playoffs every year. We hope to make the playoffs. Okay. We don't expect to make the playoffs. We hope to make the playoffs. Every team does. I think with the Maple Leafs, they're going to see what the market can bring with it, and then they'll make up their decision whether they need someone, a legitimate veteran, number one netminder, and Reimer becomes a compliment, or a journeyman backup netminder that can help push, James Reimer and nudge James Reimer, but James Reimer still retains the number one title. I think they're going to wait to see what the market can bear, because I don't think you can force that. And you know what? He was asked today, you know, will you trade that first round pick? I think it was Dave Schultz of the Globe and Mail that asked this one. Will you trade that first round pick, which may be as high as one, maybe as low as sixth, for a, you know, a young netminder who's unproven, a la Jonathan Bernier, for example? And he said, no.
Right. No, because in Burke's world, you can package together that pick and any of this collection of third line, lower second line players that he has in the roster and turn them into a number one center. I mean, that's the plan, right? We're not going to sign one. We're not going to go out and get an RFA. No. We're going to package the assets on the roster together and poof, number one center.
Well, he did, and you'll notice, I mean, Brian hasn't had a whole lot of luck with free agents, as we've noticed, whether it's Mr. Connolly, whether it's Mr. Komisarek. So I think he's gun-shy about free agency. Or maybe he just looked at the marketplace this summer and said, eh, not the best summer to go shopping. And specifically, to your point, Wish, he kept coming back today at the end of the season address, coming back to trades. We'll address it with trades. It's going to be done with trades. You know what's going to be a big day for them? The draft. That is going to be the July 1st for the Toronto Maple Leafs. That is where, because obviously he's not going to market on July 1st. That's not where he's going shopping. He ain't fishing in that pond. He's doing that at the draft this year.
So the Maple Leaf plan, for those who are wondering after that Tannenbaum letter, what exactly the plan is, here's the plan. Get rid of all the Ron Wilson players, because the Ron Wilson players evidently are not Brian Burke players. We learned that today. Wilson had a certain type of player, a certain style of player, a certain style of play. Burke disagreed with this. The general manager didn't agree with the coach's philosophy, which is brilliant. It's just a beautiful revelation today. So now we get in the Randy Carlyle players this summer. We get in a goalie. We get in a first-line center. We make a bunch of trades. So that's the Maple Leaf plan. But as we found out in the press conference, other teams have plans, too. They do things in kind of a different way. And I believe, do we have the Burke audio on the Pittsburgh model?
Yeah, I think we're going to go to that one first, because he was asked today, I think we have the question here as well, why not go with the Pittsburgh Penguins route? Here's from the Air Canada Center this morning.
In a market like this, if people need to hear a bit more of the patience, the Pittsburgh model, or the other teams that struggled for years.
What's the Pittsburgh model?
Well, they struggled for years and got draft picks.
They got a lottery. They won a goddamn lottery, and they got the best player in the game. Is that available to me? Should we do that?
Yes.
Should we ask the league to have a lottery this year?
Yeah, but
maybe we pick
tonight.
First? The Pittsburgh model, my ass.
Ooh.
I mean, they got the best player in the game in the lottery. Ray Shero's done a good job. He's an excellent GM, and he's a friend of mine.
Ray Shero,
but I love when people
GM
talk about the Pittsburgh
GM.
Model.
Of course,
the simple fact is they got the best player in the draft. We came in second that year in Anaheim. We got Bobby Ryan out of that. Impact player, good player. They got Sidney Crosby in the lottery.
Mm-hmm. Okay, a couple things.
That's it. It's the only reason.
I didn't know that Ray Shero drafted Sidney Crosby, although there was a reasonable facsimile of Craig Patrick. But, I mean, to the point about lotteries, there's a lottery every year, Ryan. There's going to be a lottery tonight. The Maple Leafs will be there. You know, they're one of five teams vying for the first overall draft pick, believed to be Neil Yakupov of the Sarnia Sting. But two, this idea that all it took was to win that lottery coming out of the lockout and get Sidney Crosby, and that's what made the Pittsburgh Penguins, that's folly. I mean, there's no, you know, Marc-Andre Fleury didn't, you know, was a first overall draft pick. Evgeny Malkin was a second overall draft pick. This team just wasn't made. for Malkin. This team just wasn't made by drafting. This isn't like the New York Knicks and, hey, we got Patrick Ewing, frozen envelope, and all of a sudden it's off to the races, here we go. This team was bad for a long time and accrued high first-round draft picks.
What you're trying to say is that number 61 in 2004 was Alex Goligoski, who was then flipped for James Neal. Number 99 in 2004 was Tyler Kennedy, who's an important top six forward for them now. You're talking about number 234 in 2002, a player by the name of Maxime Talbot that played a pretty important role in a cup victory.
Yeah.
You're, of course, referring to these players and more. And then also the trading of assets to get what you need. I mean,
They didn't win the cup with them, but trading away the number 20 pick in 2007, Angelo Esposito, and other assets to get Marian Hossa was a bold move and augmented the players that were already there. So the notion that you're right, the core of this Pittsburgh team does come from very high draft picks, much like the core of the Edmonton Oilers does, much like the core of the, well, not the core, but a good part of the foundation of the Tampa Bay Lightning does.
Chicago Blackhawks.
And where I agree with Burke is this. Because he kind of insinuated this. And by the way, 90% of the anger that he showed in that clip was because he'd still be living in California if the Ducks had won the lottery. He hates Toronto. Hates it.
Oh, I don't know about that.
He wants to be. You think he'd pick Toronto over California, man? He'd still be living in Anaheim if it weren't for the fact that the Ducks got the second pick instead of the first pick.
No way. I'll tell you why he would pick. If you ask any general manager, ask any general manager who's not employed right now, or ask any general manager off the record, if you could have one job, if you could be successful, if you could bring a Stanley Cup to one market, where if you do so, they will hand you the keys to the city, they will erect statues of you all over the town, and you will not have to ever pay for a meal for as long as you or your family live in that city, name that market. It's Toronto.
And how
everybody
many,
knows, everybody knows if you can do that in Toronto, you become a, we used this on the show yesterday, a hockey god.
And how it's many true. Of those, GMs have a lady in the entertainment industry on their arm?
Who used to work in Vancouver.
Right. Over in the western part of the continent, I believe. Mm-hmm. I think he'd still be in Anaheim. If the Ducks had Sidney Crosby, he would not be in Toronto now. We both know that. Correct?
I wouldn't go that far. No. Nope.
Okay. Well, sure. But the point is that the Penguins and these other teams, they had their struggles. They had high draft picks. But the Toronto Maple Leafs, they do it a different way. They do it the maintain, get close to the bubble. Don't make the move to make the playoffs, because we don't want to sit there at the end of the season saying, hey, we made the playoffs, we didn't win anything. We're building a winner, but we're not doing it by getting the first or second pick in the draft. We'll get there by getting like the fifth or sixth pick in the draft. We'll do it that way.
You know what was fascinating about a number of things this morning? And listen, the plan is what everyone's been talking about all season long. One, they need a first line center. Duh, we all know that. Two, they need a goaltender. We all knew that as well. And to the point about, you know, the way Brian Burke and now Randy Carlyle want to play hockey, this team needs to be more like the Boston Bruins. This team needs to be more of that, and that's the point that everyone, Randy Carlyle mentioned it, Brian Burke mentioned it. You know, he talked about, you know, the four guys in the Boston Bruins that made things a lot more comfortable for everybody else in that Boston Bruins squad. Of course, referring to, amongst others, Milan Lucic, Sean Thornton, and Zdeno Chara. And those are the main guys. So he wants his team to be bigger, to be tougher. He still thinks that's the way you win in the National Hockey League. And you know what? When you look at the most recent Stanley Cup champion, doesn't he have a point, Wish? Like, if you're going to emulate a model, and I know it's a tough one because there aren't that many Milan Lucic's floating around, although there might be one in the draft, by the way. Plymouth Whalers, Tom Wilson, heads up, mid-round first. You know, when you look around the NHL, there ain't too many Milan Lucic's out there, and there ain't too many Zdeno Charas out there. All you can sort of put together is a Boston Bruins light squad.
So, yeah, and so essentially what Burke's doing here is doing what everybody else did once the Ducks won the Cup, which is try to be the Ducks without the Ducks talent.
Oh, listen, it happens every year. What did Carolina won the Stanley Cup coming out of the locker, what did everybody do? Oh, foot speed, foot speed, foot speed. Anaheim wins. Okay, nuclear missiles, nuclear missiles, nuclear missiles. Like, it's the same thing that every team does after someone is successful with a different model.
So that's why it's so stunning that Burke doesn't realize he's building the Minnesota Wild. You know, or he's building one of those other pretenders that were there in the years after the Ducks won the Cup. That's what he's doing. He's trying to emulate a team that he can't emulate because he doesn't have Lucic.
Yeah, that really is, and Chara. And let's not forget, too, they don't have the goaltender.
No.
Like, the Boston Bruins have Chara, Lucic, and Tim Thomas. Damn! Oh, I have another question, by the way. John Tortorella is fined $20,000 for using the F-bomb four times. What does goddamn an ass get? Is that about $3,000 at a press conference? Is that $5,000? What does that get you in the NHL?
And he talked about the Penguins. You can't talk about the Penguins.
You, Brian, what are you doing? Did you see what happened to Philadelphia? Did you see what happened to New York? Are you insane? You don't
coming up on the show today, we got Mike Brophy, we've got Jeremy Roenick, we've got Western Conference playoff previews. Thanks, everybody, for joining us here on Leafs Lunch. Coming up later.
Hey, Bill Waters, what's going on? All right. It's my old program.
A retrospective on Darcy Duck.
And what'll it take to get Dave Keon back to the Air Canada Center? That answer coming up next.
All right, everybody. With that, we'll start the show proper. Woo. Yeah.
Jeff Merrick of Sportsnet.
That's a hockey, you know. It's only a game. Why do you have to be mad?
And Greg Wyshynski of Yahoo Sports.
Sabine is not English for punch me or headlock me in a scrum.
Debate hockey, pop culture, and more hockey. Merrick versus Wyshynski.
Let's begin with a note of congratulations and a note of astonishment.
Oh, yeah?
Former Carolina Hurricanes assistant Tom Rowe was hired today as the head coach of Lokomotiv in the KHL as the Russian club rebuilds after all of its players, coaches, and staff were killed in a plane crash last year. That is an interesting career move, and a career move that frankly takes a little bit of stones, don't it?
Like becoming a Spinal Tap drummer in a lot of ways. That is a challenging one. But good for, listen, good for, I think Dmitry Yaskevich is helping him put the cast and crew back together again and redo this this franchise, which, as you mentioned, and we all know, perished last year in the plane crash. So that's a daunting one, man. That's a tough gig. I got to hand it to Tom. That is a challenging job that I don't think a lot of people would say yes to, but good for him, man. I think the entire hockey world is pulling for that team.
And a couple notes off the top here. Darren Helm may be a go in game one.
Game one? I heard game two. That's, I heard Cleary might be game one and Helm might be game two. Okay.
Possible. Right. Possible. Jonathan Toews might be a go for game one. He thinks he could make it, he could answer the bell. And Michael Neuwirth on the ice today for the Capitals, but not exactly good news as he, I think, struggled through the practice. So it might still be the Braden Holtby show.
Which might not be a bad thing, right? No. We talked about who's going to pull the Ken Dryden this year. It may just be Braden Holtby. Who knows?
Could be.
What a remarkable story, right? I mean, automatically the story starts to get written. Like, if they go up 2-0 against the Boston Bruins, look out! Right? They go up 2-0 in Boston. Hey, hey. The Braden Holtby show.
I disagree with you on that, by the way. Because if there's one thing we've learned about the Bruins is that they can come back in a series. I think the Bruins are one of those teams that might be Teflon when it comes to getting down early and everybody going into panic mode. And plus, well, here's the Capitals, who can't put four good games together.
Okay. If anyone from the Washington Capitals is listening, here is my advice to you after watching last year's Stanley Cup final. If you go up 2-0 on the Boston Bruins, don't hit anyone. And if you're going to hit someone, don't make it dirty, because that gets the Boston Bruins very angry. And they turn around and they beat you soundly.
And you won't like them when they're angry.
Yeah, exactly. If you're going up 2-0 on them, just leave them alone. Don't hit. This is Nolan Ryan hockey. No hitter. No.
All right. I think Rope's there, sir.
All right. It's very good from Sportsnet.ca. One of my favorite hockey columnists when he was working with the Hockey News. I can say this honestly and openly. We've talked about this before. I never missed a column. Mike Brophy from Sportsnet.ca. How are you today, Broph?
I'm doing well. Much better after that great intro.
Well, hey, you are the man. Hey. Now you got to bring it, right? Now the expectations are up there, much like the Maple Leafs had to bring it because the expectations were so much larger than they ever have been before. What is your audit today on the, not so much the Randy Carlyle presser, but the Brian Burke presser, bro?
Well, I thought Burke was a little bit more forthcoming than I thought he was going to be. I wondered if he would walk into the room and just fill it with more bluster. He started off being a little subdued, and then when it got to the question and answer period, he started off by offering just simple 1- and 2-word answers. I think as he got a little bit more heated, he expanded on his answers. To a certain degree, he makes some valid points, although right now Leaf fans are so frustrated by 7 straight years being out of the playoffs that they don't want to listen. I really believe this organization has done a decent job in terms of adding depth, which it didn't have prior to his arrival. If you were to look at the players that had success this year, the young players, I think Matt Fratton is an NHL player. Burke said a few times that even Jake Gardner exceeded their expectations, and I was quite impressed with Jake, and now he gets an opportunity to add some experience at the American League level. So there are slowly but surely, probably too slowly for the fans, but pieces being put in place.
And when you talk about the speed of this championship team building that's happening there, I was wondering as I was listening to Burke today whether
the fact that this team doesn't follow the quote-unquote Pittsburgh model is a symptom of Burke's own impatience or a symptom of the market not allowing a team to go into the tank for several years when it plays in Toronto.
Yeah, you know what? I'll never buy into that theory that this market won't allow it. I think if Brian Burke had come in to Toronto and said, you know, please be patient. We are here's the plan we have. We are going to add young players to our lineup, to our organization, and we're going to build on those young players. And once we get good, we're going to be good for a long time. I think people would have thought that. People are so sick and tired of losing. You know, the fact they haven't won a cup since 67 hangs over this organization like a big black cloud. But the moment he made the Phil Kessel trade, all bets were off. It was an instant acceleration in terms of trying to improve the product on the ice, and many would argue that it was a miscalculation.
You know what? I could never understand. I don't want to get back into, you know, revisiting the Phil Kessel trade, although I'm going to detour here for a second, bro. What I couldn't figure out about that deal for Phil Kessel, and maybe it was because Brian Burke would never, you know, throw out the threat of an offer sheet because of what he said about Kevin Lowe when he was with the Anaheim Ducks, but I still can't, for the life of me, bro, understand why Brian wouldn't protect that first-round draft pick, i.e., Pete, we're going to make this deal, but if this pick, like if we turn out to be worse than I thought we were, and this pick is a lottery pick, that number one pick gets bumped over to the next year. Other teams have done it before. Do you know if there was any conversation about the Maple Leafs trying to protect that pick?
Yeah, I never heard any conversation, and that's so logical that it's painful to think that the conversation didn't take place. I just believe in my heart of hearts that Brian Burke took a look at his roster and felt that with the addition of Phil Kessel, there's no way on this earth that they would become a lottery team. And again, it goes back to his miscalculations. So, you know, I think most people in hockey would say they would never have done the deal. You look at Tyler Seguin, he's won a Stanley Cup already. He was the Boston Bruins' leading scorer this year, and I believe the youngest player in the history of their organization to lead the team in scoring. Then you look at the defenseman Hamilton and what he might eventually bring to the equation. And how could you possibly not sell players like that to a Leafs organization that were starved for young top-end talent? And then you bring in a guy like Kessel who, you know, bless him, he scored 37 goals this year. But he's got some downsides to his game that can't be ignored. And the question you have to ask, and in fact it's what I'm writing about today, is do you win when your two marquee players are Phil Kessel and Dion Phaneuf, who were young players that were high draft picks that other organizations spit out? They didn't want any part of these two guys, and now they're your cornerstones, the cornerstone players of your organization.
That's a good point. Moving on to the playoff hockey, the teams that are still playing. What's your take on the Eastern Conference, sir? Specifically, that delicious Pittsburgh-Philadelphia 4-5 series that should just be a bloodbath.
Yeah, you know what? That's the series that really stands out for me. And even as the end of the regular season was drawing to a close, I looked at those two teams and thought to myself, I cannot wait for the playoffs to begin, because truthfully, that series could be more interesting than the Stanley Cup final because of the geography, because of the hatred the two teams have for one another. I really think that it could be more intriguing. You notice, like, when you get to the final, a lot of fans whose teams have been beaten out, they give up on watching it. I mean, those of us who have hockey in our blood, we stick with it till the end. But this opening round series has just so much intrigue to it, and it could be just like good old-fashioned hockey.
And it's got so many great personalities attached to it, and, you know, the one personality we wish would attach to was Chris Pronger, not available for service, as we know, for the Philadelphia Flyers. But how are the battle lines drawn in this one? And if there's one area where one team has the other one completely licked, Mike, where is it between Pittsburgh and Philadelphia?
Well, probably you'd have to say the Penguins have a decided edge in net, based on the fact that Fleury has been a Team Canada guy. He's won a Stanley Cup. He was so important to the organization when Crosby was out. And you know, with Philadelphia on any night, I guess they can match the Penguins. But you're never really sure if the goaltending is going to be good with the Philadelphia Flyers. It might be good, or it might suck. You just never know what you're getting on a nightly basis.
Over in the West, you see any opportunities for an upset there?
Well, would Nashville beating Detroit be a huge upset? I mean, 4-5.
They're the favorite.
You know, Detroit is a team that has the rich tradition and history versus Nashville, which finally got out of the first round last year. I think Nashville, there's something about this team this year that has me believing it could go deep into the playoffs.
And is that because David Poile went all in on trades and brought back Radulov and Hal Gill and Kostitsyn brothers are there? Or is it something you've seen the Nashville Predators grow organically, and this is the moment where, the time is nigh and they've built towards this season?
Yeah, I think option B is probably the best one. I like the coaching of the team. You look at the factors that you need to be a successful playoff team, and you start in net, so they're covered off in net. You want your defense to be solid, so I really think the Predators have a solid defense. You look for depth up front, and I think with the additions that you named, the moves that this organization made down the stretch, they now have sufficient depth to go four rounds in the playoffs. So there's just so much to like, and they don't have necessarily dynamic scoring individuals, but they can beat you by committee, and that's another thing that I think bodes very well for them.
And finally, for me, the Vancouver Canucks, the most fascinating team in the Western Conference. Ooh. What do you think, sir? Are they vulnerable, or do you think they're just as good as they were last year?
I think they're only vulnerable if the concussion continues to nag him. That could be a damnation for them. You know, if this guy isn't healthy, and let's be honest, there's always question about the Sedins and their ability to ratchet up their game when the going gets tough to start with. So if one of them's hurt, That's a real curveball for them. But overall, I do like their team. I think I probably agree with most fans that they're not necessarily the most likable bunch. But at the same time, you can't really deny their skill, their talent. And again, they're a team that's well coached. And the goaltending has proven to be good enough to get them through to the fourth round, just not good enough to win it.
And last one for me, Mike. Yesterday on our program here, we did the question of the day was, which goaltender has the greatest potential to pull a Ron Hextall or a Ken Dryden? Do you see one out there this year that could just say, boys, get on my shoulders, we're going to the Stanley Cup?
Yeah, I'd like to think Pekka Rinne is a guy like that. People don't know a lot about this guy because Nashville's not exactly the most flattering hockey market, and they don't get the national attention that other teams get. But anytime you've seen this guy in critical situations, he rises to the occasion. So this could be a year where people who have heard about this guy actually get to see how good he is.
Yeah, here. Maybe Jonathan Quick could be one of those guys. We came on.
He's been pretty good all year. I guess a lot of people don't watch him play because he's on the West Coast. But for a team that I think is not that great a team, boy, he's done a good job for them.
Well, so many of those games, about a dozen, you could say to yourself, Los Angeles had no business picking up either a single point or 2 points because of the goaltender that they did. Bro, great work as always. Thanks so much for stopping by. We'll check in soon, bud.
Thanks very much.
There he is, Mike Brophy from Sportsnet.ca. His latest piece, as he mentioned, he's working on right now, involving the Toronto Maple Leafs and Phil Kessel.
You know, in fairness to all of the Eastern-based writers that always get this rap about, you never stay up to watch the game.
That's lame.
Listen, in fairness, I wasn't even aware there was a Western Conference until Yahoo told me I had to cover it. So,
Kings, how long have they been around? Who is this Marcel Dion guy? Triple crown?
Hold on.
Get lost.
I thought Robitaille was a Red Wing or a Penguin. What do you mean? What is this crown he's wearing? So the Western Conference, we just mentioned Vancouver and Los Angeles. Again, Sedin, not practicing today. Jeff Carter, possible for game one. So the intrigue continues. Now, it's going to be I think it's going to be a tight series. I think it's going to probably go six.
just like the previous battle between these teams, with Vancouver winning. I just think they have a little bit more, and I just don't trust the Kings' offense to come through, and I don't think that Quick can be Herculean to the point where he can steal this series, especially when you know Luongo's not going to tank it because the Kings aren't from Boston or Chicago.
And is there anyone on the team that's going to Brad Marchand one of the Sedins? Probably not. Although, you know what? I'm kind of curious.
Brown?
No, Mike Richards. Like, aren't you curious to see how Mike Richards behaves with the Sedins? Like, if anyone on the Los Angeles Kings
Richard, have... Well, not the Sedins, but Mike Richards against the Canucks. I mean, you've got some like-minded individuals in this series. If you're talking about Mike Richards and the Canucks. So that might be one to watch for sure. I think you're onto something there.
Quick little note, too. I want to get this out there. We're standing by for Jeremy Roenick. Brian Elliott, upper body injury. Jake Allen recalled from Peoria of the AHL. On an emergency recall to spell off. So Yaroslav Halak will get game one. Upper body injury for Brian Elliott, sir. How much does that handicap the St. Louis? I think you took St. Louis over San Jose, correct?
Well, I picked them to go to the Cup Finals, so I think that would have to be contingent on them beating the Sharks.
I'm
fine with it. I also, Hitchcock said it's the day-to-day thing, but obviously that who knows if it's upper body, what that means. But yeah, you know, I still think either Halak or Elliott doesn't matter. I think the system works. I think Halak is a proven commodity in the postseason, and I have the utmost confidence, sir, that the San Jose Sharks will fall to the St. Louis Blues in six games, I think it was. What did I say?
No,
six?
They
what did
needed,
I actually
they,
say? Here's my picks right here. I picked the Blues in six.
I got San Jose in seven. I got San Jose in seven in this one. But again, like I said yesterday, I have no clue. No one has any clue. That's the one thing that I hate about the gig too. I think we may have touched on this briefly yesterday. What I can't stand is when you make predictions either at the beginning of the year or, you know, beginning of the playoffs, for example. First of all, the fan base of the team that you don't pick always gets livid at you. Like, I got all kinds of stupid stuff on Twitter again last night. From Hawk, I heard you on the podcast and you don't like so-and-so. And I mean, I heard it from Ottawa Senators fans, heard it from Florida Panthers fans as I took New Jersey and four.
Oh, they're militant.
I know. There's just no win.
Yeah, there isn't. All right, joining us now on the line, the man is a hockey legend. The man is a video game legend. The man is an entertainment icon, a hockey icon, and a lead commentator and analyst for the NBC Sports Network here in the States. He is Jeremy Roenick, and he makes his maiden voyage on Merrick versus Wyshynski. How are you, JR?
What's up, guys? How you doing?
Doing well, man. So let's get right into it. When you hopped on, sir, we were talking about the St. Louis Blues and the San Jose Sharks. I think on paper some people are saying the Sharks. I think in practice some people are saying the Blues. What is your take on this series, sir?
If you look at everything involved, I don't know how you pick the Sharks. I want to pick the Sharks because I love the Sharks. I have a very big passion for the Sharks. But this is a terrible matchup for them. They don't play well against very strong defensive teams. They don't play well against extremely hard-working teams that close gaps quickly and don't give you much time to make a decision on puck decisions. And they have a great goaltender. And they're going to play physical. They're going to be in your face. All those things the Sharks struggle with. They've struggled all year. They have one line pretty much you got to shut down. If you shut down that line, you have a very good chance to win. And, you know, St. Louis beat them four times during the regular season. You know, if you look at everything up and down, you would think that St. Louis is going to win this in five.
If you look stylistically, then JR, at the St. Louis Blues, which team in the opening round would have given them the biggest fits? Would it have been Los Angeles? Would it have been Nashville? Which is a bad fit for St. Louis?
It would have been Nashville only because of their very similar styles. They are both very defensive oriented. Both of them kind of aren't the biggest offensive teams, although I think Nashville has increased their offense, adding Radulov to the lineup. But it would have been watching paint dry, watching Nashville and St. Louis go at it in the first round of the playoffs, I think, with their, quote, defensive style first.
Now, the Nashville-Detroit series, I'm wondering if you're being torn a little bit here. I mean, I imagine that the excitement in Nashville speaks to Jeremy Roenick, but I also imagine that JR has a fondness for the veteran savvy of the Detroit Red Wings. Where do you fall in this series?
Yeah, well, no question. I'm a big Detroit Red Wing fan. I have been for many years, even when I played against them. Playing in Joe Louis Arena is very, very difficult, and you can never count out a team that has so much history, that have so much so much playoff savvy. I mean, Nicholas Litlich, in his 20th year, he's never missed the playoffs. I think Mike Babcock is a genius coach, so you can never count them out, although they're not the mighty Red Wings that they have been maybe in the middle of the year when they were winning all those games at home. There's a couple holes in their lineup. I think Jimmy Howard is going to be a big player in this series. But I think Nashville is one of the strongest teams up and down in the National Hockey League, and if they can stay solid defensively and find a way to continue to put the puck in the net, I would have to also think this one's going to be done in about 5 or 6.
If you're Nashville, if you're Nashville, how do you get to the Detroit Red Wings? You know, once upon a time, the Philadelphia Flyers got to the Boston Bruins by dumping, Fred Shearer always said, dump the puck in Bobby Orr's corner and get on him quick, force him to send it to the other side to Dallas Smith and make him bring the puck out. Is the idea then send the puck into Lidstrom's corner, make him force it over to Ian White, or how else do you get to the Detroit Red Wings?
No, that's definitely one of the ways you have to get at him, is you have to tire out Nicholas Lidstrom. He's going to play a lot. You have to continue to dump it into his corner and chase him down and pound him. I mean, he's a very smart defenseman, you know, obviously, but you have to continue to pound away at him. And the more he gets tired and the more he runs around, the better chance you have of scoring goals, because he is the anchor there.
I want to ask you about the Blackhawks and Coyotes, but before I do, I wanted to ask you if you are doing anything behind the scenes or had any update as far as your influence in trying to find someone to buy this Phoenix team and keep them in Glendale.
No. I mean, I have people that would like to look at it, but I think they have a group that's ready to go, and I'm just going to sit in the background and see what happens.
Yeah, but JR, you've got NBC money. You've got T-shirt money. Just buy the team. Buy the team and keep them in Glendale, will you, please?
I'm not even that dumb, to tell you the truth. unless you can get the building thrown in with that team, it'll be a very difficult way to make money.
I hear you, and I guess that's what the Jamison Group's looking at, is maybe trying to get the building with the team, but we'll see how that whole thing shakes out. As far as the Coyotes and Blackhawks go, I think if Jonathan Toews comes back, that's a huge kick in the ass for the Blackhawks, but they're going to have to get past Mike Smith in this series, and he seems like he might be that one goalie that could maybe carry a team for a couple rounds.
Yeah, there's a couple goalies that can do that. Mike Smith is one of the first guys that you think of. This Phoenix team would not be here if it wasn't for Mike Smith. There's no superstars. Mike Smith has been an absolute rock all year. And as of late, coming into the playoffs, he's almost unbeatable. He's only given up like 2 goals in the last 5 or 6 games. He can steal games by himself. Jonathan Quick can do that also in L.A. He's proven it also. Here's a team that's gotten to the playoffs, being one of the 29th or 30th lowest scoring teams in the league. But you know, Phoenix works hard, man. They work hard. They play strong defensively, and they've gotten big years from Whitney and Verbata. You know, Shane Doan is always a model of consistency. So I think this is a very difficult series for Chicago. They won. They lost 3 games out of 4 this year, and I wouldn't be surprised if this does go 7 and Phoenix gets that home ice advantage and wins it.
Wow. Now, with the Blackhawks, this isn't the 2010 juggernauts that steamrolled their way to the Stanley Cup. You know, no Bufflin anymore, no Andrew Ladd anymore, no other key. Brent Sopel was a good player for them back in 2010 as well. But this team still stacks up enough to make it out of the first round, second round. At what point is Jeremy Roenick uncomfortable saying this thing, the Chicago Blackhawks advance to the next round? How far can this team go, JR?
I think they can go pretty far, and I say that because they have a fantastic top five. If you look at their top four forwards, you got Tate, Sharp, Hossa, Kane. That's an amazing four guys to go to. On the back end, you got Seabrook and Duncan Keith that can really move it. You have Charmelson, who plays very strong defensively. I like the young guys. Andrews is Shaw is a good little player. Jimmy Hayes is a good little player. They have some young guys that can put the puck in the net and work hard. It's going to come down to their goaltender, because their goaltender is one of those guys that just, both of them, it's Forrest Gump. You know, it's a box of chocolates. You never know what you're going to get from one night to the next.
Let me ask you a question at NBC. You work with Mike Keenan a lot on the overtime show. And you guys, let me ask you about this dynamic. It reminds me of Spicoli and Mr. Hand from Fast Times. Do you ever feel that way, JR?
Yeah, it kind of seems that way too. You know, it's a strange feeling standing next to him doing what we're doing and knowing that he had such a large part and large role of my, you know, my career. And I'm not intimidated by him anymore. So you know, I guess I wouldn't mind. Sitting next to him and, you know, having a cool buzz and listening to him talk.
How intimidating was he as a head coach? I get to work with him on Sportsnet, JR, so I know him that way, but how intimidating as a coach? Yeah, that's what Kiprio says about 94 as well, yeah.
Very, very. He was an absolute dictator back in the early 90s, late 80s. He, you don't cross him. I've seen guys chase him down the hallway with sticks because he's, you know, screaming and yelling and throwing things and, wow. He was very intimidating, boy. There wasn't a day where he wasn't yelling and screaming for some reason or another.
I've been sort of a fan and anticipating your television career since the end of your playing days, and I got to say that I think you've come along in an interesting way as an analyst. You've had, I think, moments in the past where you've had these moments of extreme controversy, the Marlowe stuff, the Guts stuff last year in the playoffs. It seems like you've really found a nice groove, though, where you're able to be provocative and really break down games in a way that maybe you haven't been able to in the past. Do you feel like you've matured as an analyst on television?
I'd like to think so. Let's get something. I don't really want to fully mature. I want to stay, you know, I want to stay young and kind of brash and out there as long as I can. I don't want to be the normal, you know, generic sit on television, say, you know, stoic face, give the same old lines all the time. If I see something I don't like, I want to say it the way I want to say it. But I like controversy. I think controversy is good when it's needed. I'm not going out to look for it, but if I see something that people want to hear the truth on, I'm going to say it. I mean, yeah, I got into trouble with Patrick Marleau and all that stuff, but, you know, so be it. You live and you do your thing and then you move on. But I appreciate that comment. Hopefully I can continue to get better, but hopefully I teach people a lot. I see a lot of things that people don't see. That's what I try to portray.
Well, you know, last one for me, JR, sort of to jump in there, Greg. Which team in the NHL remaining in the playoffs now, JR, sort of embodies that spirit? And which team in the National Hockey League right now would Jeremy Roenick, if he was still playing, like to play on?
Oh, man, that's a good question. If I could pick a team to go to right now, I would probably go to the Rangers, to tell you the truth. I just like their team. I like their makeup. I think they have a very, very tough first round. If they can get past this first round, I think they can really do some damage. But I always love the top goaltender. When you have a top goaltender like Lundqvist, he can take you all the way. So plus, it's New York. It's the big city, Big Apple. I love that.
And last one for me, JR, because you are a man who speaks his mind. In the last couple of weeks, we've seen an apology and two fines come down on people speaking candidly about the Pittsburgh Penguins. What do you think about that? Do you think it's tempering free speech in the NHL, or do you think people need to be a little more careful?
Well, Pittsburgh's untouchable. I mean, let's just get that straight. They're untouchable because if you say something bad about them, they're gonna complain, they're gonna whine, they're gonna revolt against you. The fans are gonna bitch slap you all over Twitter. They're gonna attack you. So, you know, God help everybody if you say anything negative about the Pittsburgh Penguins. They're like the almighty. I think they're a phenomenal team. I love watching their team. I love watching Malkin and Crosby and all them. But you can't say anything bad about them and not get backlash of complaining from, you know, from those camps. I wish they would just go play and we can all have fun watching them. And, you know, I think they have a chance to best chance to win the cup. I wouldn't have apologized. I don't know if I would have said exactly what Mike Milbury said, but he did, and he had to apologize. I don't know if I could, if I believed it. That's
that's just me. But, you know, Mike is, you know, he does things his way. And I can't, I don't understand why John Tortorella, that's why he got fined. That's his opinion.
I can't
stand in the National Hockey League how they can just, they can throw fines when they want if they don't like something that's said. I mean, I thought it was freedom of speech in the United States. You can say what you want, freedom of speech, you can have your opinions. I don't believe that, and I think the players should be able to speak their minds too. It's too much of a dictatorship on that aspect. I think the National Hockey League tries to control guys too much. I think it'd be much more exciting if everybody, we can just hear what they had to say and knew everybody's opinion. I think that would be great, don't you?
Oh man,
totally, man.
Preaching to the choir.
When Tortorella said that the Winter Classic was being fixed by the referees, that was one thing, but.
Yeah, but still, I mean, if that's what he believes, if he believes that the referees were terrible, I mean, you can't say that there's a conspiracy, you know, that he thinks there's a conspiracy between NBC and NHL to have an overtime, you know, for the, you know, for network television, and that's not right. But if the referees were bad, and they were bad, I agreed with them, you should be able to say that. But you say that, and you get fined. I don't see anybody, I don't see the referees having to answer to all the terrible calls that they have throughout the year. The refereeing, with the exception of maybe three or four, has been way less than average. But where's their punishment? Where's their sense of accountability? I don't see it. You can't say anything about them.
You're preaching to the. We want to give you a high five through the phone right now. There's nothing more that pisses me off, JR, than watching 24/7 and seeing access to the referees' room during 24/7, and that's a place journalists can't go to ask a simple question about a blown call in a game. It was infuriating
to watch.
And
you know what? Yeah, they're so. But they have such a tough job. They have thousands of people yelling them at every night. They're never going to please everybody. Things happen so quickly. But there's two things that you see that I see that everybody sees. And if everybody sees it, how can't they see it? And then their calls are totally blown, and then they don't have to answer to anybody. It's, I don't know. It's just too much protection for me.
Good stuff, JR. Thanks, man. And we'll be watching you on NBC. Coverage starts on Wednesday night. Jeremy Roenick will be in your house pretty much until June. So please leave a beer on the table for him.
Yeah. Clean up the place. Yeah.
All right, boys. Thanks for having me on. I appreciate it.
Sure. Thanks, JR. That's some good stuff right there.
I have a feeling that he is. I mean, Penguins listen, it's the, we saw a peek into how a lot of those people probably feel, and I don't think it's any surprise that it's a guy who works for NBC that feels that way, because you know the heat comes down to those guys from the league.
Oh man,
when it comes to Sid, when it comes to the Penguins,
it's the Crosby Cops. We've talked about it before. Right, the Crosby Cops. Okay, to the apology. What I was disappointed in, and I normally don't, you know, get on broadcasters at all. I just don't. I'm on myself, and I don't get on the parent companies. But I'm surprised that, you know, that someone from NBC didn't go to bat for Milbury. That he was just sort of left out there. Now go make your apology, bad boy. You know, we have a partnership with the Pittsburgh Penguins and National Hockey League. I don't know this for a fact, but I suspect. The chain went like this. Complaint from the Pittsburgh Penguins to the office of Gary Bettman. Gary Bettman to either NBC Sports or directly to Mike Milbury. You can't do that. We demand an apology.
No, I went to NBC Sports. I speak of this with a little institutional knowledge of the way things work over there. And I can tell you for a fact that there are certain things that have to go through a process before they can be published or they can hit the airwaves. I mean, that's part of the partnership between NBC and the NHL, is that there's an understanding that if you are going to, take a shot at the league for something, CBA, something like that, not necessarily like supplemental discipline, but big stuff, you know, you need to at least give them a heads up that it's going to happen. It's the way it works over there. So I am not surprised in the least that if something was said to the National Hockey League with regard to the Penguins being pissed off about Mike Milbury, that this apology happened in light speed after the whole thing broke.
Yeah. I felt bad for Mike. I felt bad for Mike Milbury. Because now when you watch him on television now, what are you thinking? Like, how did he back down? How did he back down from his comments? And the apology just, like to your point, it just seems very corporate and very forced and very phony.
Yeah.
Right? I guess, here's the script. I'll read it. I'll say that I'm sorry. I felt bad for Mike. I really did. Like, whether you, however you feel about Mike Milbury, and you know, whack the pinata all you want about the Islanders general manager position, how you feel about it. He's talked about players in the past and the Thelma and Louise comments and all that. And I get all that, but didn't a part of you feel bad for Mike Milbury the next time you saw him on television?
I don't know if I've seen him on television since, have I?
Oh yeah.
I might have.
I
don't remember.
Yeah, he's been on.
I know he wasn't. I don't think he was part of the big conference call this week for NBC.
But I think they're keeping him away from that.
It's not exactly, as I said, I did the NHL Worst Awards on Puck Daddy yesterday. It's not exactly been the pinnacle of great years for Mad Mike. I mean, he had the thing with the kid in Boston on the ice, which is, you know, dead and buried now. He had the apology for the stuff he said about Sid. I think the concussion stuff has really messed with his process and softened his stance a little bit on stuff. It's been a very kind of transitional year for Mike Milbury as a pundit.
I think Mike, as fascinating as the game is right now, and as we've talked about before, this game is going through a growing pain, and we're watching it unfold before our very eyes. I think Mike Milbury is going through a growing pain as well, trying to reacclimatize himself to what this game is right now, measured up against what it used to be, i.e. when Mike liked it the best, and where the game is headed and what his position is in it, and how he tries to remain relevant, current, yet at the same time, you know, bring with him this framework or this model that was put together when he grew up in hockey in the 70s. So I mean it's a fascinating study right now. Like, remember when he went pineapple over the Eric Nystrom elbow and thought like, oh, five games, 10 games. And really it was nothing. Like, it's just like, I think that Mike is trying to figure out, and we're all trying to figure out what this thing is right now. But I mean, he's really struggling with, you know, what's good for the game going forward versus what elements of the past do we need to keep in this game so we can follow the mantra of literally sitting on the shoulders of those that came before us. So we still have a solid foundation in history. It's still trying to progress forward. I think Mike's trapped right now. I think he's growing, but he's going through this awkward transition phase. And we're watching it all on television in the intermissions on NBC Sports and on the hot stove on hockey night.
From a hockey perspective, JR brought up the Nashville-Detroit series, and I believe he said that could be a five-game series for the Preds.
Yeah, I know. He thinks they could steamroll them.
Listen, I picked Detroit in this series. I picked them, I believe, in seven. Yeah.
Well, you love the skill. Like, and I love it too. And sometimes it's tough not to get hypnotized by that skill set and fall in love with how these guys play.
It's not necessarily even a skill set. It's the fact that they're the veteran assassins. I mean, they just take out people, and I love that about them. And I love the idea of this Nashville team. All of the logic is on Nashville's side. They broke their playoff cherry last year as far as winning around. They've got the shutdown defenseman. They've got the goalie. They're a better offensive team than they've ever been. The Radulov thing, great coach. All of the logic is there, and I just love the idea of the Red Wings, who have become an afterthought. Think of it this way. This is the last ride for Holmstrom. It could be the last ride for Lidstrom. The window for this team, this collection, to win a Stanley Cup is like an inch from closing. This should be the story of the playoffs. The Detroit Red Wings and their last ride should be the story of the playoffs, and they are an afterthought. They are the Washington Generals to the Nashville Globetrotters in this series. That's stunning.
I don't know that I'd call them the Generals. I mean, it's a little more skill. They're not standing around watching the Natural Predators turnstile.
Let me rephrase it then. They are the heavyweight champ that is being. They are basically, if Shawn Michaels wrestled John Cena, and Cena went over, it's the torch passing. It's the whole thing, right? I mean, that's what it is essentially, right? Or Bret Hart. It's Bret Hart. That's what it is. It's Bret Hart and Shawn Michaels, and Bret is expected to hand over the strap, but he refuses to. So now Alex Radulov has to throw in the towel. It's the Montreal screw job of the National Hockey League Stanley Cup playoffs.
It's Montreal 97 all over again. And at the end of it, we're going to see Pavel Datsyuk spit in someone's face.
That's right.
Side of the rink. Is that what you're trying to tell me?
Wrestling with Red Wing Shadows. The documentary comes out.
You know what? Listen, I think that if they do, I think if there was someone on the Detroit Red Wings, and maybe it's number five, much like Denny Potvin did years ago, the year he retired, announced that it would be his last season, I think we would get that this is the last hurrah story written for the Detroit Red Wings. Like, if everyone knew this was the victory lap for home, well, we kind of do, but if everyone knew this was the victory lap for Nicklas Lidström, I personally don't. I think he's coming back for one reason next year and one reason only. It's the Winter Classic. But I think if everyone thought that this was the victory lap for Nicklas Lidström, I think that you would see those stories written, and that would be one of the marquee stories heading into the playoffs. You know, the one more for Lidström. You know, the last hurrah for this one team because it's getting, not dismantled, but it's going to be changed more than significantly next season. You know what I mean?
Yeah, no, it's true. I think there was more of that this year. The season started with a lot of that stuff. And then it just kind of disappeared. But you might be right. The fact that the Winter Classic is out there as a carrot for him to come back.
Oh, totally. Yeah.
Is maybe part of the equation why this isn't being talked up like this. But again, I love the idea of a Mike Babcock team going into the series as the underdog.
Awesome.
He is the preeminent psychologist amongst NHL coaches. And I love the idea of this team being put in a position where the Detroit Red Wings are the underdog in a series. I mean, that's just brilliant.
Oh, hey, Wish, guess what? Sorry to cut you off. You have another thought about Detroit before I move on? Okay.
Please.
We have two more apologies in the NHL to announce.
Oh, please.
Both Jay Feaster and Brent Sutter have apologized moments ago at their press conference in Calgary, apologizing for what happened this year with the Flamboise. So we can add two more apologies onto our... This is the I'm sorry year. Like, I'll look back on this year in hockey and say, this is the year that everyone said I'm sorry.
Sorry. And to that end, our question of the day, which we failed to announce before at the beginning of the show, but luckily put out on social media during the show in order to get these answers, our question of the day was, give us your NHL apology. Your NHL apology. For example, Jason Haas writes in, sorry for the early results last year. We're still under construction. Talk to me in 5 years, Steve Eiserman.
Yeah, let me try to find another one here.
This is from DX Flyers. We messed up the 2007 NHL draft lottery. The Philadelphia Flyers were supposed to have the first overall pick. signed NHL. This is from
Van Riemsdyk. They got Van Riemsdyk.
They did all right for themselves. This is from Brandon Drescher. I'm sorry for hiring Steve Tambellini, Kevin Lowe. straight to the point.
Oof, that's a tough one.
Dustin Lammers writes in, to all fans of NHL hockey, we as a league would like to apologize for Tim Peel. That is all. God, I hate Tim.
Oh, jeez. Really? He speaks well of you. From Joey Reed. Loves your stuff on Puck Daddy.
Oh, brilliant.
I'm sorry you had to score that goal. Hunter to Turgeon. Hashtag NHL apologies.
Terrible.
Oh, man, do we have the best people listen to this podcast. Come on. That's tough.
This is from Coronado Paterez, again, just killing the effing name. And he's so nice. He said, thanks for the 100 podcast. Here's my NHL apology. Being a Canucks fan, I'm sorry to the rest of the NHL that we have such a good team that everyone is so jealous of and continues to hate on us for it. Although I do admit a cup for the Canucks would shut up a ton of the haters. I apologize that we have agitators that do such a good job at what they do, like LaPierre and Burrows. Don't tell me that in the NHL, that team in the NHL doesn't have a few of those guys who do the same thing as well. So he believes that the Canucks should apologize for being awesome, basically.
Oh, well, they haven't won the cup yet, though. I think, you know what, I can't... part of me really wants the Vancouver Canucks to win the Stanley Cup
to get over the hump.
I'd be curious to see whether that adds fuel to the fire, pardon the pun, Vancouver, or that just calms everyone down in Vancouver. Because they're just so anxious about winning the Stanley Cup, and for good reason. They've had a couple of kicks at it. I can still hear the goalpost at Nathan Lafayette here, 1990, hit in 1994. I'm curious to see what happens, whether it calms everyone down and they finally can relax that they won a Stanley Cup, or the annoyance level up another decibel. What do you think happens? What is
so
your
you're
gut
saying
tell you?
That they there's a certain amount of unrest in Vancouver, and that looting the Stanley Cup may finally put out the fire.
I just wonder if that will calm everybody down. I don't know. If you're a Vancouver hockey, if you're a hockey Vancouver hockey fan, tweet me, please. If you live in Vancouver, just please tell me if the Vancouver Canucks win the Stanley Cup this year, will it ratchet up the annoyance factor, the in your face factor, or will it just calm everybody down because finally everyone is satisfied?
Personally, I think it's how they win it. Like if they go to a game seven and they win the game seven with a power play goal with 2 minutes left, well then everybody's gonna be like, F that. You know, if they win, if they sweep, I mean, it's a different deal, right? Like, I think back to 95, right? If the Devils hadn't destroyed the Red Wings in that final and had, like, clutched and grabbed their way to a 7-game victory and then eked out an overtime win, I mean, they would have been seen as counterfeit. Completely counterfeit. Don't you think?
Yeah. Yep.
Half a season.
Yep.
Doing that.
Yep. I know.
Peter P. writes in, I want to apologize to the NHL on behalf of this program and all of its listeners who are posting sarcastic apologies as the Penguins or a member of the Penguins organization. I'm pretty sure the program and its listeners weren't swearing while besmirching the fine, non-arrogant, non-hypocritical, and non-favorite organization in Pittsburgh. It took Merrick vs. Wyshynski about 75 episodes just to add prizes to Game Show Friday. A $20,000 hit probably would send it under. Well done.
That's pretty good. Karen M. Oh, she's one of our favorites. Sorry we weren't familiar with the rules of the expiring CBA, signed Oilers management. Ooh, a nice little Magnus Pajärvi tweet there for you. Oh, by the way, I want to give a quick plug for Karen. Got a note from her yesterday. Just launched with her buddies a hockey blog called Not Another Hockey Blog. And this is what I always tell people. And good for you, Karen. The idea, Not Another Hockey Blog. There's never enough hockey blogs. Like, whenever anyone asks me, like, hey, what should I do? I want to get in the industry. I want to do this. I want to do that. I always say the same thing. Start a blog. Just start a blog and do something on it every single day. And it may not pay off for a month, a year, 2 years, 3 years, 5 years, or whatever, but just get in the game and start doing it. You can start a blog for free. Mm-hmm. And look at how many careers have been built just by saying one day, I'm going to start a blog. I always say the same thing. Good for you, Karen M. and all your buddies. Just start a hockey blog.
I get asked a lot on email probably every week. I will augment what you said with something else. Buy a high-end video camera and put yourself on YouTube, because if you'd like to make money at this game, here's a handy way. Rolling ads in front of your video productions. That, my friends, is the pathway to making some dough on the web these days. This is from Cavanaugh in Vancouver, and there's a couple of them. I would like to apologize for making Colin Campbell seem less arbitrary, Brendan Shanahan. I'm sorry that I'm not Tim Thomas, Roberto Luongo. I'm sorry that I make more commercials than goals, Alex Ovechkin. And then
that's snug.
This is a terrible one, but I have to read it.
Oh no.
Sorry for what I did to both of your daughters, Marty Brodeur to his father-in-law.
Oh Jesus.
God damn. You guys are brutal.
Oh man, you guys are harsh.
This is from Bodo. This is Scott Housen's apology to the CB, to this Columbus Blue Jackets.
Oh, I'm still back there on Brodeur. I'm still back there, bro. I'm frozen back there, bro. Oh.
This is from Bodo about Housen. My track record speak for itself. No playoff wins. Last place by a landslide. A goalie who wouldn't be able to play in the AHL. And a superstar who loves the city but wants out. Clearly, I'm not qualified to do this job. However, your Columbus Blue Jackets owner insists on continuing to pay me. So sorry, but I'm sticking around. Two more non-apology emails to read here real quick. This is from Michael Perino. The Toronto Model is the subject header. The Toronto Model. What Burke wants the Leafs to do is actually what the Rangers have done recently. You're a middle-of-the-league team for a while, draft really well, and develop your own talent, Dubinsky, Callahan, Delzato, Kreider, blah, 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 and then augment with free agency. Leafs haven't drafted as well as the Rangers in the last 7 years or so. What do you think about that?
Well, much to that model, they have drafted a lot of college kids, and Chris Kreider is the most recent one from BC. I think that is the model, and I think he wants, in a lot of ways, to do what happened. I mean, he was most successful, as we all know, with the Anaheim Ducks, even though much of that was Brian Murray's team. I mean, it wasn't as if he bottom fed in Anaheim for a number of years and accrued high first round draft picks. He understood that it was a couple of college signings, you know, Dustin Penner, I'm looking your direction, University of Maine, Black Bears, come on down. And I think that's the model that he knows, and I think that's the model that he thinks he can replicate. And I think it is a lot closer.
Granted,
you're right. I think it is closer to the Rangers. But what the Rangers had one thing, the Maple Leafs don't, and we keep coming back to it. They have the goalie. And we keep realizing this more so than ever. If you have the goalie, it's 70% of your team. If you don't have the goalie, it's 100% of your team.
And that's why I think the biggest mistake the Rangers made, I mean, the Leafs made, was going out and signing their Swedish goalie as a free agent rather than taking him in the seventh round of the draft like the Rangers did. I mean, clearly that's what they should have done. That's the big mistake. And finally, on Mike Milbury, this is Wade Melton, doesn't have to apologize without making the 35th concussion remark, but that part wasn't defensible with everything that's been occurring in the concussion realm. I agree the Penguins get a free ride, but the concussion crack did him in. I agree. That's one thing we should say about that apology, sir, is the fact that he did make light of Crosby's concussion. And in this environment, not only because it's Sid, but in this player's safety environment, it's something you probably can't do.
So should I stop saying Conky Doctor then? Am I being glib about it? Should I be that, you know, oh my God, it's the end of the world. When I say, oh yeah, he's got to get checked out by the Conky Doctor before he comes back.
Wait, that was for all this time I thought you were talking about a urologist. But
no,
Conky
Concussion.
Okay. Yeah, oh, Conky.
The Conky Doctor.
I didn't realize there was an, there's an N. Oh. I'm sorry. Entire time.
Oh, man, you're a goof. No, the Conky Doctor.
Yeah,
that's how I always refer to it. I don't know. Is that insensitive?
No, not at all. But all right, we got to head out of here.
I got to go today. I got to go today, too. I know yesterday I tried to keep you long by talking about the Devils and the glory years.
That was a good time.
But today I'm like,
really, I am Greg Wyshynski, Yahoo Sports.
I am Jeff Merrick, rushing out to get to Sportsnet to do panels and to see what happens at the NHL draft lottery tonight. Yo,
nice.
Columbus, 48.2%. Yeah. Edmonton, 18.8%. Montreal, 14.2%. The Islanders, 10.7%. And your Toronto Maple Leafs, 8.1%.
I think we're doing a draft lottery live blog tonight, as we often do, just making fun of the goofballs as they look pissed off and upset about their lots in life. Check out again the playoff previews on Puck Daddy. Got the Boston Caps one today. Got one coming up later on. Also coming up tomorrow will be the formal Puck Daddy picks for the Stanley Cup playoffs, including Jeff Merrick's, including Elena Pagliarello's from this very podcast.
Hey,
on Puck Daddy,
awesome.
As well.
So Ottawa in four, Elena, or Ottawa in five?
Ottawa. She actually put Ottawa in three, and I'm reading the CBA to see if that's even possible. So there you go,
I'm ending on this one. My last comment for the day. Folks, do what Karen M. did. Start a blog. Everybody, if you have time, start a blog. Start your own podcast. Go out and do something. The more the merrier.
What he really wants to say is plant a tree, because he's a bark eater. But thank you to Mike Brophy. Seriously, thank you, Jeremy Roenick. No, seriously.
Yeah.
Thank you, Jeremy Roenick.
Yeah, that was good. The Penguin stuff.
Seriously.
Yeah.
Thank you, Jeremy Roenick.
How quick is that post going up?
5, 4, 3. Bye.